night preceding Asara B'Teves. Yonam of Chodesh Teves. Rather interesting and fascinating. In brief, of course, we mark with Asara B'Teves when the Nebuchadnezzar laid siege to Yerushalayim with the first Mikdash. But on Ches Teves, we have the completion of the Targum Shivam. And this is viewed as a very, very negative event in Jewish history. I think the issue is this really for the first time made the Torah accessible to the non-Jewish world, which led in time to the non-Jewish world claiming title to the Bible. Such an extent that Chazal addressed the issue. And he said, Osid Lovay, the descendants of the Neitzrim, will come and claim that they are the chosen people. So the Rabbeinu Shalom's response to them will be Chumash writes, Ki api advorim ha'il ha'karati from Bris, api advorim ha'il is api Torah Shabbat Malpah. The Torah Shabbat Peh is what remains the heritage of Klal Yisrael. It remained fully B'Kedushoso. It is not something which is accessible to the non-Jewish world. And that remains the defining aspect of Klal Yisrael. But there was a time in our history that the Torah Shabbat Peh was equally defining. And now, what occurs after the Targum Shivam ultimately leads to the fact that the Bible is something that's claimed by the entire world. It's theirs. It's hard to go into a hotel room in the United States without opening up the night table and finding a copy of the Bible inside. Not courtesy of us. So this is an event which was also viewed as a negative event in Jewish history. So the Mikdash obviously affects Kedushas Yisrael. But that's what we struggle for, and the whole goal is to define appropriately the sense of Kedushas Yisrael. In the Chodesh of Teves, we particularly mark two events which had a very, very negative effect. Our understanding of the realities of what Kedushas Yisrael is. We have Shalai Loser Mitzvah Shin Pei Zayin. So what do we have now? Sanhedrin. Shalai Loser Acha Machshobot Alei V'Ri'ah Sainayim. We should not, I would say Loser, the best translation for our purposes, we should not wander after thoughts of the heart and what the eyes see. Nalav shalai noser acha machshobas alei v'riyah sainayim shenema v'loi sasuro achrei nevavachem v'yachrei aneichem. It's a lav. Don't follow in an improper sense one's heart and one's eyes, asher atem zonim achareihem, which is common that people stray after them. And the Sefer HaChinuch defines inyan lav zeh shenimnanu, we have been prevented, shlo niyachid machshav oseinu, we should not willfully designate our thoughts lachshav b'deyesh and heipach hadash atara b'nu yolo. We should not willfully spend our time thinking in terms of the philosophical ideas which are inconsistent with the basic ideas of Torah. If a person allows himself to explore those type of ideas, it could lead him to stray from the Derech Hashem. If the times a person comes to have an interest, a curiosity concerning such types of philosophy. Yikatzer machshavto behem, he should cut it short. V'yishaneh, and change his thought process. Lachsho v'darkei ha-Torah amiti v'atayim, and begin to contemplate Torah. As the Chaim Volozhin writes in Nefesh HaChayim, there are varied rhythms of the human body. The thought rhythm is also a rhythm of the human body. And we don't even know exactly how to define it and how it works. But thoughts constantly spin through our minds in rapid succession and over sometimes a very wide range of notions. Why we're thinking about this today, why I wake up tomorrow and I think about something else, we don't ourselves understand. But it's one of the rhythms of the human being. So Chaim Volozhin writes, what will actually enter our mind, we have no control over. The human being, nothing that he can do which will affect it. But, or which will guarantee that he can affect. What a human being must strive to do is when something enters his mind that he feels is inappropriate, is not to dwell upon it, but to let it pass and push on to the next thought and dwell on something else. So the Sefer HaChinuch tells us here that if he begins to think in an inappropriate fashion, so he should change his focus immediately to consider the ways of the Torah. Now, kmokein, and similarly, that we should not pursue the things that we see in this world. In what sense? So, Chazal translates, first of all, acharei levavachem, as he's going to quote, zominus, acharei aneichem zuznus. That's one simple meaning. But beyond the simple meaning, shelo yirdoif ha'odom achar mara'inov. V'chlalze, shelo yirdoif achar taibas ha'ilam hazah. A person should not pursue the pleasures of this world. Ki acharisam ra'o, because they will bring a person down, okidai bizoyim v'kosev, they will humiliate him. B'zeu sha'ol, zeh sha'omru zichon alav ra'ocho, b'lo yisasur ra'ocho l'vavchem zu minas. Seems fine. I found her to be pleasing in my eyes. So, the second half of this is the antithesis of Kedoshim Tiyo, which is Lirdov Acha Taivas. And a person's agenda is to live for the pleasures of this world. That's what he lives for. And he constantly is looking for something that he hasn't experienced yet, some new pleasure of this world in some new fashion, so that he'll find something, another exciting thing that Adam has. So we're not dealing with in and of itself physical experiences of this world. Physical experiences are part of man's existence. We are physical beings, we're not malach. But the question is, does that become our agenda? Does that become what we're out to do? Well, that which we live for. And that's what Chalal Tashur is literally lured of Achas Taibas Ha'ilam Hazer. Now, at first glance, these seem to be two random ideas that one should not, in an intellectual sense, allow himself to stray from the Rabbeinu Shalom. There are different types of appeals which can lead a person away from the Rabbeinu Shalom. A person may intellectually wander from the Rabbeinu Shalom. A person may wander not because he has any big philosophies in this world, but he finds the Torah restrictive. It doesn't allow him to experience everything that he wants to experience in life. You know, he passes by a fancy restaurant and they're eating lobsters. biggest. There can't be 5 billion dummies in the world. So there must be something to eating lobsters. I also believe there's something to eating lobsters. It's true. So if a person lets his senses search for sensory satisfaction gain sway over him, so he can't live with himself because he never tasted a lobster. And kahina v'kahina. We live in a very, in today's world, in a world is a world which is much more involved in lird of achatayvus olam hazeh. Mankind, for one of the few short periods in history, part of mankind is raised above subsistence level, and furthermore, we have access to the whole world. So it's easier for man to try to fight off his boredom. Why? Because he can go to Mexico, he can go to Thailand, and he can go to Hawaii, and to Samoa, and to New Zealand. It's endless where a person could go. So it's endless the sensory pleasures that a person could seek in today's world. If a person lived a little shtetl in Eastern Europe, so it wasn't so long before you experienced everything that life was going to send you away. You did not have a wide range of access to the world. My father-in-law lived in Poland. The nearest town was 25 miles away. And under the best of circumstances, it took an entire 24 hours to get there. That's how difficult the travel was. So how often did a person under those circumstances ever go to the next town? It was not the everyday happening. So life had its limited, you know, options. But today we have the whole world as a playground. So these are two things which can lead a person away from their Ribbono Shel Olam. We think in a certain regard, other than the fact that they just happen to be two major avenues which lead a person away from their Ribbono Shel Olam, but they're random in a certain regard. There's no connection between the two. You know, a car can break down because the transmission breaks. A car can break down because you get 4 flat tires. They may be very common, you know, things to happen or uncommon. They have nothing to do with each other. One has no influence upon the other. But yet Chazal were very careful to inform us that these are not two random happenings. These are very, very closely associated with each other. Relates in Sanhedrin of some of Gimel Amud Beis. Omer Rav Yehuda Omer Rav. Yoyin hoyu Yisrael ba'avel deskochah ofer Mushayin bo mamash. The Jews throughout our history were never taken by Avodah Zarah. We never thought that this was the means by which we should worship the Ribbono Shel Olam. So why do we find that Avodah Zarah was such a thorn in the side of the Jews? But all the same, for Shoftim, it's the constant problem of Avodah Zarah. In Melachim, it gets even worse. Because whereas in Sefer Shoftim, it's not institutionalized. It's people individually worship Avodah Zarah. In Sefer Melachim, with the rise of Yerovam ben Nevat, Avodah Zarah becomes institutionalized. Rise of the Nevi Abal, the whole movement. The Nevi Abal reaches Eretz Yisrael. So It was such a massive problem in Jewish history. עד כדי כך, דן אנשי כנסת הגדוי לו, הוא מספלו לקודש ברוך הוא שבמרבטו לייצר הרע for עבוד זו. Such an extent. So why did they worship עבוד זו? What was the proof of עבוד זו? ולא יעובדו עבוד זו כחום אלא להטו להם הרעיס לפר הסי. That their purpose was that they wanted free license to violate the moral norms. As Rashi explains, so Yitzram Tokvon Alarayas, the Yitzhara pushed them to violate Arayas. Omru, so what did they decide? They have a simple approach. Nifro Kolola Torah Me'aleinu. We will rebel against the Torah, and therefore we are Chicho Asun Alarayas. And therefore, no one will be able to rebuke us about Arias, because we don't believe in the Torah. So, that was the motivation to get involved in Avodah Zarah. It was not Avodah Zarah itself, but rather they saw Avodah Zarah as an avenue which could open up the world of Taivas for them. The Gemara now asks the following. Moser Rav Mesharshia, Kishor B'neiyam Mizvichayisam, as the children remember the altars of the Avodah Zarah, Omer Avodah Zagadim Sheyesh Lo Gaguim Al Benov. But the Novi means Kishor B'neiyam doesn't mean that the children, it's the simple meaning, it means just as a child, when he thinks of his child, longs to be with his child, when they thought of the Avodah Zarah, they longed for association with the Avodah Zarah. And as Rashi says, Mashem Shoyun Hem Gaguim Aleyim, that they had a strong pain of feeling its absence. Called them Sheyesh Lo Gaguim Al Beno, as a person longs to be with his child. And Bezochro Nenach, when he thinks about his child and his child away, he groans in anguish. V'hochim Mashem, as Kizchor B'neim, Doim Aleyim, Tzchiras Mizvichoyis of Asherayim. Well, a person remembers a child that's absent. Similarly, when they remember the Avodah Zarah, that was their reaction. And so that suggests that they had Gagun, that they were attached to the Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara answers, Boser Darvikubo. Boser Darvikubo. Acha Shiris Kashubo Me'atman. Once they willfully involved themselves in Avodah Zarah, for an unholy agenda of Arias, talk from Chibos on Aleim. Then they got wrapped up in Avodah Zarah too. And the Avodah Zarah became meaningful to them. But what brought Klal Yisrael to worship Avodah Zarah throughout history was the urge Lahat Lehem Arias of Rahasya. So Chazal now taught us with this, that these are not two random happenings. How, in fact, Klal Yisrael, which are inherently Maminim, how do we come to violate Avodah Zarah? The answer is because we violate those Asura Acharei Levavachem because of Acharei Einechem. The Acharei Einechem is the motivation. The Acharei Levavachem is the excuse. But this is a very, very essential point in understanding the topic at hand. We now understand in Shara Kedusha, Rav Chaim Vital writes that why is there no mitzvah per se of midas? In his reckoning, he did not find a particular mitzvah which was to have midas. So we discussed this back in Shavu Shuvah. What the meaning of Olach de Bedrochov? There are different interpretations. One learns Olach de Bedrochov is in Maisim, in actions. One should do Chesed. It does not necessarily imply to be a Baal Chesed. There are sources which indicate it also means to be a Baal Chesed. The Rambam incorporated both views. But others learn Olach de Bedrochov is in Maisim, on actions. It did not refer to the Midas, to the temperament of a person. So Rav Chaim Vital wonders, why is it that there's no mitzvah for midas toivus. Certainly, no one will deny that's not an essential aspect of the Torah. So why is there no mitzvah for it? So Reb Chaim Vital answers that the mitzvah, Maisa Mitzvah, is built upon a platform of midas toivus, and they start after midas toivus. So midas toivus precede at a foundation upon which the Tariyak Mitzvah stands. So here we see a very strong example of that. That if a person lives for this world, that's his agenda. He allows his toivus to become the focus of his life. So what happens is that even something which has absolutely no appeal to him, avodah zarah, he'll get himself involved, one of the worst avodos in the Torah, with no appeal to him whatsoever. But for what reason? The heart of the Hamarayas before Hashem. So, they understood now that avodah zarah is ein bei mamash. And yet a person could come to get himself wrapped up in avodah zarah for no other reason except the heart of the Hamarayas. So Chazal understood very carefully the relationship between the philosophical and the practical in this world. And that the philosophical bent that a person takes is often a mere mask for his material wants. And that's the famous statement attributed, I believe to Reb Chaim Volozhin, some say to Reb Chaim Brisk, but I believe it's Reb Chaim Volozhin. But Eich Sheyia, that he met a Talmud of his that went off the derech. So he asked him, why did he go off the derech? He says, Rebbe, I had a lot of kashas. So that drove me off the derech. So he said, I want to ask you a question. He said, when did you take off your yarmulke? Before you had the kashas or after you had the kashas? Your kashas are not kashas, the terutzim. You chose whatever certain things that you wanted in life. And philosophically, you had to have a basis for it. So now you have a lot of kashas. But the kashas, you're not driven by your kashas. You're driven by other things that you want in this world. So this is always what man has to be careful for. Now, because we cannot say that we're free of the Yetzer Hara, Dovid HaMelech was able to say, Lidl Cholo B'Kirbi, that the Yetzer Tov and the Yetzer Hara are both fully channeled. He reached the point in the service of the Rebbeinu Shalom, they were fully channeled to Avodas Hashem. But since we're not in that madrig of Dovid HaMelech, Dovid HaMelech says, Kichosin Oni, his entire Avodah was Lefni Meshuras Hadin. So that means all of us are exposed to the walls of the Yetzer Hara. We're not free of the Yetzer Hara. If we're not free of the Yetzer Hara, then by definition, we're not free of philosophical mistake either. We can readily fall into philosophical error. So we have to be particularly careful in a philosophical sense, because when we did not reach the level of Dovid HaMelech to be free of material pursuits in this world, the major agenda of life. So these two ideas are very, very intimately connected with each other. Shairesh mitzvazu nigla. How far reaching this principle is, we'll see. The root of this mitzvah is quite obvious. You be there by fulfilling it, Yishomer Adam Echatay Lashem Kol Yomav. He won't come to violate the Torah anyway. In a philosophical sense, he won't stray from the Rebbeinu Shalom to Avodah Zarah, and he won't fall into Znus. So So we're talking, these are the two, there are three major averus in the Torah. One that we're in general not so likely to do is Leisirtoch. Most people seem to manage making their way through this world without getting involved in Leisirtoch. Mankind has, to the largest extent over the course of history, the greatest number of people that have traversed this earth have managed to figure out how to go through this world without violating Leisirtoch. Not that there hasn't been a significant minority otherwise throughout history, but by and large, man has managed to exist in this world without violating Leisirtoch. So what are the real nisyonos that a person has? The real nisyonos stem probably the Zohar Minas, straying from the Rebbeinu Shel philosophically, and Tylus. Right? Those are the three big averus, Shrichas Domim. So that, you say, pretty much will observe. But Avei Zohar and Arayas are the two which man remains challenged by. So if we succeed in not getting ourselves overly involved in either of these two, so a person will remain Yishomer Bezeh Yishomer Odom Echatoy L'Shem Kol Yomer. We'll basically remove the major motivations, the major chaton that he's likely to do. This is a most fundamental aspect of Yahadus. What is the root of all the things that we do which is improper? First stems from improper thoughts. And the actions follow from the thought process. So where we wander in our thinking process will lead us into improper actions. So this is a hypothetical. If a person would die term yoilet, before he gives birth, in zeichel abon, there'll be no children. So similarly, if we undermine the odds, the improper machshobas that a person has, whether philosophically or for taivus, so where are the averus going to come from? Nimtzei zosamaniya shayresh shukola taivus yotzis mimena. If we're careful about wandering in these directions, we're protecting the very source of all that's good. V'dabini, and as you know, the Sefer HaChinuch wrote this, as he told us for his son. V'dabini, he says, my child, you should know, to him margalo b'fumech, and you should constantly repeat, Masha omru z'chonu l'vrocha, aveiro gareres, aveiro mitzvah gareres mitzvah. That this is in two levels. Rabbi Saul of Salon speaks about the fact that in Jewish philosophy, they've debated what the Yetzer Hara is. Is the Yetzer Hara something which is internal to the human being? His drive for sensory satisfaction, his impulsiveness, and the Yetzer Tov is his reflective quality and his yearning for nobler things in life. That's one interpretation. A second interpretation view the Yetzer Hara as external to man. Rabbi Saul of Salon said that his view is that the Yetzer Hara includes both. And mitzvah, gereres, mitzvah, and avera, gereres, avera. And then he says, shechar mitzvah, mitzvah, shechar avera, avera. Now he tells us this is at two levels. There is a psychological, emotional aspect to it. That, to put it in the modern psychological terms, we reinforce by the actions that we take, we reinforce what we're about. So if I do good things, so it reinforces the good within me. If I do cruel things, so it reinforces my negatives. So a person that does mitzvahs has reinforced the good within him. So it's more likely that he's going to continue to go in that direction and keep doing such type of things. Secondly, there's a spiritual aspect to it. That the mitzvah brings a person kedusha. And because of the Kedusha, he's more likely, because he has an increased sense of Kedusha, to want to do even more mitzvahs than he did before. And Chalila, the other way, if a person does an Aveira, so now he's gone further away from Hashem. So now it's even more likely he'll do another Aveira. So that's what he writes, an Aveira Gereres, Aveira Mitzvah, Gereres Mitzvah. One leads inevitably to the next. So if we address ourselves to what's most fundamental, the rest should follow from that. Shem toshes daim cholamalos tavos cholo pamachas. If you place your mind upon fulfilling your inappropriate physical needs, even once, timshoch acharei kama pomer, then you will keep going in that direction many times. Because you increase the focus in that area. If you'll merit being a person that's strong, and strong, what's the ultimate gur? To conquer you, to relax on the effort, to seal your eyes, you're not even, we don't wish to experience at any level what's improper. Pamachas, Yeko and Echolasas came time upon me. This will facilitate my ability to multiply it many times over. And he tells us something very, very fascinating. Yataiva Timshoy Chaboso, the search for sensory satisfaction, attracts man, physical man, from Shochayayan al Shoiso, in the same way that wine attracts those that have are too overly involved in it. He assays them, those that are involved, the light in drinking. They never have enough. We know there's the famous story from one of the Musa's farm that there was a man. His father was a drunk, and it really disturbed him. I mean, how his father conducted himself, and it caused a great deal of ridicule for him, and he degraded himself. So he decided, what is the solution to the problem? The solution to the problem is he's going to take his father down to Skid Row, and he'll see how all the drunks are lolling around in the street and how miserable it looks, and this will shake him up and realize that this is what it looks like. Who wants to do this? So he takes him down to Skid Row and shows him one drunk after the next. Finally, he shows one guy, he's so out of it and he's lying in his own filth, gloriously drunk beyond anything else that they've seen. So he figures this will finally, you know, shake his father up. His father goes over and he speaks with the man for a while, and then he comes back. And he says, Father, what were you speaking to him about? Were you asking him how he got himself into this mess? Whatever. He says, no, not at all. He says, I asked him, where did he get such wonderful whiskey to do this job? The drunk becomes so involved in drink that that's it. He doesn't see anything else. Nothing else in the world. There's no end to the desire for drink. And the more they involve themselves in the desire for it gets greater and greater. If they would drink a cup of water, if they started going in the other direction, they started drinking water, and little by little they would lose their alcoholic urge. So they would see that this is in fact better off for them than they were before, if they undertake that. This cannot dover us now. The same thing is true with Kaibas. Kolishber Gelo Bataibas. As a man becomes involved, habituates himself to taiva, who was smido behener and being repetitive about it, yichazik alav yitzro yoyim yoyim. His yitzro becomes stronger and stronger. His urge for it. Vihimono mehem, and if he finds somehow, sometime the strength to refrain, Yismar b'chalko tomit kol hayom, he will rejoice the whole day over his newfound freedom. For the yira, he will achieve also as Adam Yosha. Man was created with a sense of yashrus, of what's correct in this world. But the problem is that we have all types of our own agendas that we're trying with which to rewrite the program. Ones that ultimately don't serve us. We watch the world around us. We see people destroyed by these things. They don't have, they lose their self-discipline. And they bring about their own destruction. And yet, people are people. The next group of people comes and they go chasing down the same roads. Nothing changes. Dinei ha-mitzvah zu k'tzorah, he says, this is not a lengthy mitzvah, it doesn't require much explanation. Harebi Arno with Heroib Ikron, he says, I've already, in these few short paragraphs, defined the basics of what this is all about. But ha-heges mitzvah zu b'chol mokum v'chol zman b'schorom v'nekeves. Now one thing before we go on, is we have to realize that what determines what's considered a person that's really the Fahra Taivas, that he has a material agenda in this world, that's what he lives for, and the person that's Oyver Hashem. Now at the extremes, it's easy to define. At the extremes, right, you have one person that's basically almost a Porush from Olam Hazeh, almost angelic. You take a Moshe Rabbeinu, he lives basically as an angel in this world. Above all, the human cause. And we have another person who obviously lives for this world. He's so involved in Olam Hazeh that Ruchnius doesn't cross his mind. No time for such things. But most of the world is somewhere in the middle between those two polar extremes. So how do we define what's really the Fachra Taiva? So the Ramchal addresses this issue when he talks about a discussion of Precious. And the Ramchal is rather fascinated. He brings many proofs from Chazal that Precious is a very significant leader. And on the other hand, he cites, for example, the Shalmi, which states that for every pleasure that a person didn't take from this world, the Kodesh Baruch was going to bring him to Mishpat. What's the pshat? Should there be a porish? Or should we chase after everything in this world? So he answers the following answer. Man should take from this world whatever he needs. But needs means whatever he physically needs, whatever he needs, whatever he needs psychologically and emotionally for his happiness. Whatever that may be, that's what a person has to take from this world. If it's something that he doesn't need, he can live without it, and he chases after it anyhow, then that's a violation of precious. So that defines the person that lives for this world. Beyond what he needs, he creates new agendas for Elam Hazah, beyond the needs that he has. So a person should seek and must seek to take care of his needs. If a person doesn't take care of his needs in this world, then he's distracted from Avodas Hashem because he's being pulled in a different direction. So that a person is obligated to take care of in this world. That which he doesn't need is extraneous. And that varies from person to person, from door to door, from place to place. The classic story that I have in this regard, I have a chava, he lives today here in Key Garden Hills. He lived for many, many years, about 20 years he lived in Eretz Yisrael. And he was deeply involved with Bali Chuk in Eretz Yisrael. So he had a Talmud once that came to him with a very, very interesting question. He said, well, I'm getting married, and I have X amount of dollars to my name, and it's not getting replenished. When I finish using it, that's it. You know, I have to leave the yeshiva and find myself some work, but I'm not going to be able to stay here anymore. So then I have two options. I could rent a normal apartment, as all of my peers do, and pay X number of dollars per month for it. I could rent an old Rishonly flat with primitive appliances and pay X minus dollars per month for it. Now, obviously, it's going to make some difference over time, over a number of years, of how long he's going to be able to stay in yeshiva and learn. So what should he do? Perhaps he should take the end of the situation of X minus a much simpler circumstances, and therefore be able to stay in yeshiva longer. That's the shaila that he asked, a very fascinating question. So my chaver took him to Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef should answer, paskin to him what he should do. So Rabbi Yosef listened to the shaila, and Rabbi Yosef told him that he should rent an apartment in accordance with the way his peers conduct themselves, not less than that. This is a person that lived his whole life in Meir Shalom, and raised about 10 children in two tiny rooms, 2.5 tiny rooms, 2 rooms, a little hall, a closed-in porch. And that's fine. He has no need in his life to go anyplace else but that apartment. But yet he understood that that's for him. The young Talmud that's coming to ask him cannot live his life like that. Why? Because his balance is different. The balance in his essence, in his being, between the Ruchnius and the Gashmius, does not lie at the same point. And therefore he can't live his life that way. And his family can't, because his family is not there either. So he has to live to be Oyver Hashem, consistent with the way the expectations, what normal expectations for him. So whatever your peers do, that's what you should do. Which is very, very essential. We can't compare ourselves in our time to an earlier generation. And our children can't compare ourselves. Our children can compare themselves to their grandparents. The world is so changed. There's no association of the two. So the whole door of a door, we have to assess carefully that which we need. And that's many years ago, I went to see Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. I think it's the only time that I ever spoke with him, as far as I recall. And I came to his house, and as I came to his house, I was going out of the house. He was on the way to Marav. So I walked with him from his house to Shul, to the Rosh Shul in Shari Chesed. So after the davening, I came out and I was speaking. I was there with my brother-in-law. And we met Rav Shlomo Shvazron Zatzal, and Rav Rosenthal Zatzal, who was the Rav of Shari Chesed Shul. And he was a goyin adu, a dayan in his own right, a super goyin. So we started to talk. They were both, in a very good mood. So we stood outside Mishmuz for a while. So Rosh Hashanah Shvadron described he said he won a lottery that it was a zeicha to get an apartment in Shari Chesed. The apartment had 2 rooms. But he had to win a lottery to be zeicha to get that apartment. It wasn't so easy to get. He says, but they actually only lived in 1.5 rooms. They never lived in 2 rooms. Why? Because they had a quarrel, but didn't have a place to live at all. So they cut off 1.5 of the rooms. They built a wall and gave 1.5 of a room away to the quarrel, so the quarrel should have a roof over their head too. And they were left with 1.5 rooms. And that's what he lived in his whole life. And he was describing, he says, he was once in London, someone that he knew, and he saw him better, and the person was just like beside himself. And what was the problem? The problem was he had a few kids, and he had four rooms, five rooms, whatever, and he was just going nuts. It was just too tight, you know. He couldn't live, you know. So he had to take care of his things in England. He went to other places. A while later, he comes back to London and he meets somebody. He's all somebody. What happened? He says, he just moved to an apartment with six rooms now. He says, yeah, you know, he had like two kids. But now he has four bedrooms. He could live now. He was going crazy before. He wasn't shy to live. We can't, each door has to assess itself. This transcends all time, and that's why it's one of the mitzvahs to midyas. It's charam and kavas. If a person devotes his thoughts, either apikorsus, heretical ideas, or to tivus, which causes a person to go away from that which is her desires for us, and to enter the realm of those that have strayed from their word. This is very bitter. The first thing he was talking about before, which means to go, he has to find new thrills in this world. There's nothing positive in and of himself about him. There's nothing to gain from it. We live in an age of extreme sports. Right? If a person doesn't go skydive and jump out of a plane, you know, parasailing, the rich can bench, he's lacking something. My Talmidim asked me, are you allowed to do such types of things? He said, I don't know enough of the statistics. I told him to answer you. I don't know how dangerous it really is. But one thing I do figure is the insurance companies, their underwriters, their businesses, to be able to properly assess danger. That's what they're about. That's what they're paid to do. And the insurance company lives and dies by the underwriter's ability to properly assess danger. And I said, those involved in these types of activities, they don't write life insurance for them. So they must know something more than the rest of us, know an understanding of how dangerous it is. If we involve ourselves in these things, it's a constant violation of this law. As long as he's involved in these activities. Despite the fact that it's allowed, there's no malchus. There's no particular activity that we could point to that we would warn a person about. At times we see things and become aware of things we're not supposed to be aware of. We'd be better off not knowing. And our minds contemplate things which we would be better off not contemplating. That's natural to a human to have this experience. So what point are we supposed to cut it? Chazer, we can say, don't eat a piece of chazer. We do this. But whatever a person's doing, maybe circumstances led him to that. And what his avoid is not to go to the next step. So how do we know exactly where the line is when a person's supposed to, we can't define. How can he actually hug below them as every you do? There's no fixed line which is the mutter and the osa. Circumstances bring a person to all types of things. The question is how he responds to get himself out of it. Besides the fact that it doesn't need a maisa, just by thought. And the klal is that he's kusafti lemaila, shakolav shevshalavra lava bli maisa. His shita is that if there's a lav that you can be over without a maisa, alavisha also bo maisa, even though at times you do a maisa for it, and look in a lav, lefiya daima, that you do not get malchus for such a lav. So therefore, there's no malchus for it. But this is ultimately, it's interesting that this is the last of the six mitzvahs to midyas. Because really what comes out is that this is the preservative for everything else that came before. That the person could contemplate Yichud Hashem, and Avas Hashem, and Yiras Hashem, all of this, And at the end of the day, what will it come to? Nothing. Why? Because he becomes to, he allows himself a loisa surah, the Babakan Beachare and Echam, he undermines everything. So this last in the sixth media is really the insurance policy for all the other ones that came before. If we are meticulous in observing it, then we can avoid all the other issues. There are even those that claim that what's the mitzvah of Amunah? If you have a mitzvah of Amunah, either you believe or you don't believe, but Shaykh a mitzvah of Amunah. But there were those that claimed, that the Chaim of Siga claimed, that the Pshar is, that the mitzvah of Amunah is Moshe Sura. To be a Maimon or not to be a Maimon in and of itself, of course, does not really have full control over. So what we do have full control over is to stay away from the things which lead us away from the Rabbanu Shalom. When we stay away from those things, we will be Mamins. So he viewed the mitzvah of Amunah is expressed in Moshe Sura. So Rabbi Yisai, we considered all of the mitzvahs tweedious, and they are profound mitzvahs which form the very essence of what Yadus is. The whole structure of our Avodas Hashem stands upon it. So I hope that all of us have achieved a certain inspiration from them. Through studying them, be a little bit more inspired to realize what the unit is. Good night.